from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, however tainted a championship may be, it is still a championship. I've been having a discussion with my friend Chris here about the alleged taint on the Lakers' putative march to the championship. But we have bigger fish to fry today than that. We'll wait to see how tainted the parade will be. There are tensions still diminishing, but still apparent between India and Pakistan. As a matter of fact, did I bring it? Oh, it's here somewhere. There's a story about the software boom in India, the rose coming off the software boom in India because of the tensions and the possibility of nuclear war with Pakistan. Although our gaze is averted from that a bit this weekend by the idea that the tensions have decreased thanks to some diplomacy by both this country and Russia, that's still on the radar screen, that battle. Of course, there's the continuing problem in the Middle East. And I don't think the last word has been heard on the troubles between Ireland and Northern Ireland yet. And there are those waggish among us who have been known to observe, well, isn't it interesting? The three I countries, India, Israel, Ireland, in the center of these intractable, seemingly intractable conflicts. Of course, that lets Italy and the Ivory Coast out, but the Ivory Coast's real name is Côte d'Ivoire, so maybe they let themselves out. Iceland, I don't know what their real name is. But Italy points out the problem with the I country conceptual framework. Ladies and gentlemen, I propose a more useful analysis of why these three areas are the centers of intractable conflict. All of them are areas where recently, upon splitting the scene, Britain, closing down its empire, drew some hasty boundaries. You over there and you over there. Goodbye! And that's what we're left with now, is the people on either side of these hastily, well, not in Ireland they were hastily, but they're British drawn British drawn boundaries. That's the common thread here we have. So, in a week where we watched the Brits celebrate the 50th anniversary, the Golden Jubilee of Queen Elizabeth, may we ask in her next 50 years for better boundaries. Hello, welcome to the show.
She keeps a Moët Chandon in a pretty cabinet. Let there be cake, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. A building, a remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy. At a time of an invitation you can't take. Caviar, cigarettes, well-versed in etiquette. Extraordinarily nice. She's a killer queen, gunpowder, cheddar tea. Beam. Guaranteed to blow your mind. Ooh, recommended at the price. Insatiable and appetite. Wanna try? To avoid complications, she never kept the same address. In conversation, she spoke just like a baroness. Middleman from China. Because she couldn't care less, fastidious and precise. She's a killer queen, gunpowder, cheddar tea, dynamite with a laser beam, guaranteed to blow your mind. We'll be right back. cat. She's as willing and playful as a pussycat. Momentarily out of action, temporarily out of class. You're absolutely right.
Bird, honey, got a bird, we sing. a natural thing. I learned to love you, baby, before I call, honey, before I call your name. Baby, before I call, honey, before I call your name. I wouldn't trade your love for money. Honey, you're my warm heart, baby, you're my warm heart's flame. Have mercy, baby, on my heart, look, mama, on my heart, look, so. Baby, on my heart, look, honey, on my heart, look, so. Got a rainbow around my shoulder, shine like silver, baby, look like Klondike gold.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this and every edition of the show. And speaking of birds, some updates on my observation last week that Los Angeles is now a habitat for feral parrots. Apparently we're not alone. Dear Harry, Sarah writes, the Hyde Park University of Chicago community on the south side of Chicago also has a band of dirty, chatty, huge community nest-building feral parrots that survive even in the midst of the heavy snows in winter. They are a wonder. Steven says feral parrots are not that uncommon. When I lived in Monterey, there was a fairly large flock of them there, which surprised me considering the climate, which is hardly tropical. Fred from Emeryville says San Francisco also has feral parrots. My understanding is that the infestation is concentrated in the North Beach Telegraph Hill neighborhood. I saw them in Washington Park in North Beach sometime between 5 and 10 years ago. They travel in a pack, and they travel very fast. If I were a sparrow, I'd be terrified. And by the way, he adds, have you ever visited Washington Park in San Francisco? There's no statue of George Washington, but there is a statue of Ben Franklin. All right, then. Apparently, they're also in Brooklyn, near Brooklyn College. Apparently, they've nested in the Brooklyn College area since the end of the 1960s. Either a couple of pet birds got loose or a shipment from Argentina where their native got lost. In any case, writes Adam Gopnik in The New Yorker last year, the parrots have adapted brilliantly. They haven't adapted anybody. They've adapted brilliantly and pretty much behave like normal starlings, sparrows, and pigeons do. They nest near warmer power lines and transformers. They're known as monk or Quaker parrots. Highly intelligent, trainable, and are very good talkers. There are additional colonies in Valley Stream, Long Island, and Canarsie. But the flocks at Brooklyn College are especially large. And now, Alexandra explains where our feral parrots in Los Angeles may have come from, a bit of the provenance. As a child, she writes, I remember that when the Anheuser-Busch Company closed their amusement park brewery tour facility, Busch Gardens, in the San Fernando Valley, they released all of their exotic birds into Los Angeles. My Aunt Ruth swears these are the birds are responsible for what is now a very large parrot population in L.A. Practically every day that I happen to be in Mar Vista, I hear the squawking of a flock, and a few seconds later see them flying overhead. And finally, I am advised by another listener, the collective noun for parrots is company. So we have companies of parrots all over the continental United States. The question now would be, what's the northernmost habitat that they've colonized in their fine ferality? So we'll clear up the whole parrot situation before long, and another follow-up on Coca-Cola, the freshest Coke in the world. Scott says, in a recent trip down to South America, I learned they still package Coca-Cola in glass bottles, which is significantly more satisfying to drink from than a cheap polyplastic tube. But more than that, Coca-Cola in South America is made with sugarcane as the sweetener, as opposed to on our continent that uses corn syrup. The taste difference is quite obvious. Therefore, the most refreshing Coke cannot be found in Atlanta, but in an ice-cold glass bottle in Quito, Ecuador. So on the list of reasons to go to Quito, Ecuador, that would be... Yeah, that's right. That would be one of... Oh, I'm sure there are more. I'm sure there are more. Ladies and gentlemen, this week, President George W. Bush, say it till you get used to it, announced a reorganization of the Homeland Security function of the federal government to do what he had said had already been done, to get the agencies talking to each other and communicating better. The Washington cliche now is connecting the dots. And the first dot to be connected is, when did the idea come up for this announcement to be made and this reorganization to be made? Tony Snow of Fox News asked White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card that question on the Sunday morning Yak.
Did the president give his address this week to deflect attention from hearings on Capitol Hill?
That is a really absurd suggestion. This was done deliberately over a long period of time to develop what was right for the country.
According to the New York Times, a long time ago in this case means, according to Ari Fleischer, White House press secretary, who gave the exact date, the first meeting to come up with this plan was April 23rd, a long time ago. And here again is Andrew Card, White House chief of staff.
Finally, global warming. Is it the president's position that the planet's warming up, but we don't know why?
It's the president's position that the response that came out of Japan, the so-called Kyoto Treaty, would not do anything to mitigate the problems of global climate change, if there are problems, and I happen to think there are probably some problems, but I'm not sure that that's the right way to mitigate them. There are better ways to go, and the president has talked about the better ways to go. First of all, markets should play a role, you know, the marketplace, the economy.
Now, I just want to point out, the man said the markets play the economy. He probably didn't mean to say that, but after Enron and Tyco and Global Crossing and you name them, maybe the markets do play the economy. Maybe he's right. Ladies and gentlemen, viewer anger has prompted the British Broadcasting Corporation to consider ending its two-year-old marketing deal with TiVo after customers found that a BBC sitcom was recorded on their machines without their consent. Owners of the machines complained of TV spam after TiVo set the 50,000 machines in Britain to record Dossa and Joe. The BBC now says, we've learnt a very big lesson. The threat is a serious worry for TiVo, who TiVo's European vice president said the trial had been an error. So that is trial and error. It's literally trial and error. The company still wants to provide TV companies with a new distribution system for their programs. Of course they do. Otherwise, TiVo will get sued by the networks. That's why they're doing it, isn't it? Don't you think? Don't sue us. We'll jam your shows onto their machines. The TiVo spokesperson said the principle of downloading program trailers and commercials is better established in America, where TiVo has most of its nearly 500,000 subscribers. And we haven't complained at all, have we? Ladies and gentlemen, Business Week now comes to the party and decides that high-definition television and digital television ain't happening. Wonder where they got that idea. A Business Week correspondent says high-definition television is simply not ready for prime time. He set up three high-definition sets and one HD-ready TV in his house. Just about everything that could go wrong did. One set conked out after one day. Others couldn't receive the digital signals from local stations. All apparently lack technology that allows consumers to perform basic functions, such as recording high-def programs. Says Sony's marketing director, very little has been standard about this whole digital transition. Says the Business Week writer, that's an understatement. The learning curve is so steep, it's easy to fall off. He says, he points out, as has been pointed out on this broadcast, you need an antenna to receive digital signals. And, he set himself up in San Francisco with a Radio Shack model nearly as big as a BMW Mini Cooper. The antenna got him only one station, an NBC affiliate in Sacramento, 80 miles to the east. But he had trouble with satellite services, too. And he learned that some DirecTV boxes are incapable of receiving high-definition content, including the combined TiVo DirecTV box in his possession. Pardon me. And he adds, your fine brand new set may be obsolete, bowing to Hollywood's concerns about digital piracy. TV makers currently ship sets that allow you only to watch high-definition programs but not record them. It's practically a given that broadcasters will deliver their best content through a new connector that transmits encrypted high-definition audio and video. What happens to the $4 billion worth of sets already in the market? Some manufacturers suggest that existing digital TV owners will have to shell out more money for another set-top box, while others say the ramifications are unclear, says the director of U.S. Public Relations for Thomson RCA. We have a grandfathering issue we have to manage very carefully. That's from Business Week, getting on the boat, hopping on board, just to prove, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm not making this stuff up. Although the committee, the semi-secret committee of the entertainment industry and the computer industry that was supposed to agree on a protocol, don't you know, for protecting, copy protection for digital programming has dissolved in disagreement between the broadcast industry and the computer industry. So maybe you guys who bought, you early adopters don't have to throw your sets away quite yet. And now time for a regular feature of the broadcast, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
The CBS television network says a U.S.-born Iraqi terrorist wanted for the 1993 World Trade Center bombing has apologized for the attack, saying that other suspects talked him into it. CBS says it interviewed Abdul Raham Yassin in Iraq. He'll be on 60 Minutes this week. The statement quotes Mr. Yassin as saying bombing mastermind Ramzi Youssef convinced him to take part in the attack to avenge the Gulf War. Mr. Yassin says Youssef and another bomber, Mohammed Salameh, originally targeted Jewish neighborhoods in Brooklyn but decided on the Twin Towers instead. He's on the FBI's list of the 22 most wanted terrorists in the world. But he apologizes. And the Catholic Church has bought newspaper advertisements in Australia to apologize to victims of sexual abuse by priests in Melbourne and Sydney. The ads cost tens of thousands of dollars. Hey, better that than pay the victims, don't you think? In the advertisement, the archbishops apologize sincerely and unreservedly on behalf of the church in Melbourne and Sydney to all victims of abuse and to the Australian community for the hurt suffered. A church spokesman said the decision to place the ads was made on Thursday so their message can get across in exactly the way they want it to get across. In the ads, the archbishops reiterated the compensation payments were not an attempt to buy silence. But a disabled woman who claimed she became pregnant after being raped by a Catholic priest in Australia had to sign a secrecy agreement before the church would pay her $15,000. The deal was authorized by a New South Wales bishop just last month, appearing to contradict the statement that says victims have been prohibited from speaking out. Last month's legal agreement between the disabled woman and the church appears to bar her from talking about the incident. It also bars her relatives or advisors from talking, and church employees and agents are bound by silence. Under the terms of the agreement, if she does talk, she'll have to repay the money. And if I talk, I'm not in Australia. Okay. That's a relief. Just this once, that's a relief, ladies and gentlemen. So connecting the dots, the problem is alleged to be, wait a minute, before we get to that, let's get to this. Remember Florida? Sure you do. From the Palm Beach Post, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement is searching for the Palm Beach County Canvassing Board's final report detailing voting problems and unusual circumstances in the 2000 elections. But there isn't one. The Canvassing Board didn't write it, and it won't, ever, says Board Attorney Leon St. John. Why didn't we write it, he says? All hell broke loose. There's no need for a final report. It was history, covered all over the news. The Canvassing Board was distracted at that time, says Judge Charles Burton. Remember him, the guy who was on the cover of Time magazine looking at the ballots with the thick glasses? The unusual circumstances involved the manual recount process as well as extensive litigation. It was all well documented in several books, law review articles, and numerous state and federal court opinions. Teresa Lepore, the third board member, refused to comment. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement began looking into it, the election, late last year. So there is no report. But, you know, you can buy a paper. Now, connecting the dots, the problem seems to be the FBI, or the, I've been pointing out, ladies and gentlemen, in a stunning demonstration of how back to normal we are, that the FBI and the CIA are spending an awful lot of energy planting leaks in the Washington media that blame each other for missed opportunities to detect in advance evidence of the September 11th hijackings. The further evidence of how normal, how 100% back to normal we are, is that in the reorganization of Homeland Security, in the Department of Homeland Security announced by President Bush this week, the two agencies not moved, not touched from their current perches are the CIA and the FBI. They know how to play the game. Give them that. Man, I don't know how to connect the dots, but they know how to play the game. By the way, why is it called the Central Intelligence Agency? Good question. Glad you asked. Because after the Second World War, President Harry Truman, looking at the 11 or 14 intelligence agencies then in existence in the federal government, most in the military, decided there had to be one place where all that intelligence was pulled together, where all those dots were connected. So he formed, or asked Congress to form, the CIA. Little cyclical, don't you think? But the FBI has not been unbusy. The FBI had a couple of agents spending most of a year surveilling a New Orleans bordello in a white Victorian house on a shady boulevard near a Presbyterian church. The madam ran it with help from her mother. The madam's daughter worked as a prostitute. New Orleans blue blood bankers, white shoe lawyers, businessmen, and a former pro football player were said to be among those who were customers. The FBI was investigating the knock and shop brothel after a Louisiana doctor accused of insurance fraud said he spent more than $300,000 at the bordello. That got the FBI involved. Their explanation for spending almost a year, let's see, April 2001 through September, three months. This was brought up by senators this week as, well, is what the FBI is doing. Investigators said the house was the center of a nationwide prostitution ring with outposts in nine cities. Well, that explains it. This case is not Marbacher. This is not major criminal activity, says a former federal prosecutor, Harry Rosenberg. Oh, Tom Daschle was the guy who brought up the how weird this is. So that's what the but, ladies and gentlemen, let's look back in history a bit to see what happens when the FBI and the CIA do cooperate. According to today's San Francisco Chronicle, there is evidence that the FBI and the CIA cooperated in planning activities against campus activists during the 60s with the cooperation and apparently it's suggested even to aid the political career of Ronald Reagan. Asked by this, Reagan's former chief of staff, Edwin Meese III, said as far as he knew, the FBI didn't give Reagan special political help, and he does not remember planning any activities against subversives. He doesn't remember. He's not the one with the thing, but he doesn't remember. The records obtained by the San Francisco Chronicle reveal Reagan and his first wife named names with FBI agents, named people who later became blacklisted in Hollywood, including Larry Parks and Howard DeSilva. Reagan had said in 1985 he only had a minor involvement with the Bureau when he was president of the Screen Actors Guild. Then CIA Director John McCone met with J. Edgar Hoover in January 1965 after the free speech movement held its first sit-ins. First sit-ins. Already they're meeting. The head of the FBI and the head of the CIA. Records show they decided to leak information to conservative regent Ed Pauley at the University of California, who would use his influence to curtail, harass, and at times eliminate liberal faculty members. Hoover wanted a crackdown at Berkeley before the student protests grew nationwide. When, to Hoover's dismay, President Johnson picked Clark Kerr, head of the UC Berkeley campus, to become his Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, the FBI background check included damaging information the agency knew to be false. So, ladies and gentlemen, when you want the FBI and the CIA to cooperate, be careful what you wish for.
her from the wreckage, gone her from the wreckage, into a brand new car.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of people say there are no seasons here in Southern California. Of course, that's kind of ignorant. Right now, it's the time of year when the jacaranda trees or the jacaranda trees are in bloom. And it's they're kind of pinkish purple flowers. And we're aware of the change of seasons because different crap gets dumped on our cars from time. So we know that it's jacaranda season because the pinkish, purplish flowers are what make a mess on our car. Anyway, you're probably hearing this music in the background. I'm on hold. I don't usually do this during the broadcast, but I've been having a fairly intractable computer problem, and this was the time of day when they said the wait was the least long for technical support. So I, with your indulgence, am...
Hi, this is technical support. I'm Chad. What's your last name, please?
Hi, Chad. It's Shearer, S-H-E-A-R-E-R.
Okay, I want you to go ahead and spell that for me.
Well, I just went ahead and did, but okay. S H E A R E R, Harry. I'm on the radio. I'm on the air right now on the radio. But I do have.
Okay, Harry. What I'd like you to do is to go ahead and tell me what the problem is.
All right, I will do that, Chad. I'm operating on a Mac, and when I connect my computer to the printer,
okay,
I get like. The page numbers, the text of the page prints, but the page numbers. Hello?
Hello. What do you want me to do?
Hello, Chad.
Hello. Hello, Ganesh. Hey, Pat.
Hell.
Hello, Krishna.
Hello, Chad.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi.
Your printer... doesn't print page
numbers. It's hello.
Help me, Sue. Help me, please.
I'm calling you for help.
They're bombing right outside my door. I mean, look, I'm open.
I can't. Look. Where are you?
I'm in Bangalore.
Bangalore? Bangalore?
Yes. Bangalore, Nebraska.
Bangalore, Nebraska?
Uh-huh.
All right, look, Chad, who's bombing out there? In Nebraska.
Yeah, it's the Pakistanis or somebody.
In Nebraska.
But now, what... operating system are you running?
Well, I'm running 9.1, but
okay.
I really don't
I want you to.
Why would the
help! Get me!
It sounds like they're getting closer. Chad.
Oh Ganesh.
Help.
Oh Ganesh.
All right.
Oh.
Maybe call when the whole time is longer, but we'll continue now with more. Entertainment and infotainment on the show.
I'm your chic oasis charmer. I'm your knight in shining armor. I'm your dozen roses farmer. I'm your guy. I'm a supper club fanatic. Thunderstorm, electrostatic. From 3 points, I'm automatic. I'm your guy. Now if you want a carriage ride and an escort to the ball, my horse is waiting right outside, just give me a call. Well, I take meetings, I'm a player, I eat breakfast with the mayor, I will be your dragon slayer, I'm your guy. Thank you. off the train, but I'm the one who's there. Yes, I juggled fire in the carny, played some golf with Jack and Arnie, even wrote some songs for Barney. I'm your guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, in New York City right now, Woody Allen is in court. Well, he's not in court personally. He's off directing a movie now. But he was in court last week. He is suing his former producer and friend Jean Dumanian and her boyfriend Jackie Safra, an international financier. Oh, well, I'd like to be that. How much money does it take to be an international financier? I'm so close to Mexico, it can't take that much. He's suing them for more than $10 million. He believes they haven't paid him the money for that they owe him on the movies that they made together in their deal. He accuses them of shortchanging him out of more than, well, $12 million for eight movies, starting with Bullets Over Broadway in 1993. On the stand early this week, apologizing for a hearing loss in his left ear and later claiming vision problems, as he left the courtroom, he answered his lawyer's questions at length and apparently had to be told by the judge several times to cut him back. Stop talking, said the judge at one point. I'm the director here. Jean Dumanian's lawyer, she's the former friend and former producer, asked Allen to read from a letter he wrote to Dumanian shortly after filing the suit. Quote, this was supposed to be amusing, like a Tracy Hepburn movie. In court by day, friends by night. What's gotten into you? We talked about this very scenario many times. Allen admitted he wrote that and added she found it amusing. As he testified that she found it amusing, Dumanian wept in the courtroom. He said, Jean and I spoke about this many times. We joked that we would be having dinner at Le Cirque and in court by day. Allen testified he resented Dumanian's lawyer referring to his advisors as a group of Hollywood Harrys. Interesting. These are highly respected members of the show business community, Allen said. I regard it as an attempt to smear them. I don't associate with Hollywood Harrys. And on the second day of his testimony, Allen testified that he had said, we can get a knowledgeable figure in the movie business to arbitrate the dispute with Dumanian. We get somebody we could trust. We could get a rabbi. I don't know. Can you put all that together in this form, or do you need a more conventional form in which to enclose it?
Fade up on wide shot courtroom. Stoney's voiceover. I was on trial. Me. I mean Himmler. The minute the war is over, he goes right back to making millions off Bayer aspirin or BMWs or something. But I'm on trial in my very own city. Actually, Janice and I were both on trial. We'd sued each other. Me. We could never sue a fly. Now, suddenly, with the Knicks in the toilet and the Rangers playing golf, I was on the stand. Close up on Stoney Kepler. Voiceover continues. Not that I was doing such a bad job. I mean, one thing even my severest critics agree on. I'm a superb witness. I mean, but between my command of details, my wit, and my advancing vulnerability, I could be more devastating on the stand than Lizzie Grubman on an IV drip of sodium pentothal. But
Mr. Allen?
Yes, Your Honor.
The opposing counsel asked you a question. You're responding with some kind of strange monologue.
Too self-deprecating, you think?
Because just answer the question, please.
I know, but I'm a creative person. I answer creatively. The head has its reasons.
Go ahead, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Allen, Did you agree to extend your contract with my clients past the first three movies?
That's absurd. Yeah, I mean, that's beyond Samuel Beckett. It's so absurd. I mean, it's beyond Ionesco. It's pure Dario Fo. I mean, I could never conceive of doing such a thing.
This isn't your signature on a contract extension dated May 25th, 1995.
It's, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I think I may need laser eye surgery or something. I mean, forget about those documents or whatever you're holding. I can barely make out your figure.
Mr. Allen, please to tell the court, would you possibly be sexually interested in me?
Me? I mean, please, you're a smart, attractive girl in your mid-20s. I'm a tall, dashing goy in my early 30s. What could we possibly have in common?
Your Honor, request a 15-minute recess to confer with my client.
So ordered.
Tracking shot. We move through the front door of Le Cirque, past a guy in a tuxedo who swears he was with the resistance during the war, and settle on a banquette in the front of the room, where we discover Stoney and Janice picking at their amuse-bouche. Janice was the sort of compulsively elegant and mysterious woman who always dressed as if she was on her way to Halston's funeral.
Well, thank you for at least calling me elegant.
Only in the stage directions.
Look, I just don't think it's any of your business.
I just want to know what you guys conferred about during the recess. I mean, what's wrong with that?
It's privileged. We're in a trial. Macy's doesn't tell gimbals.
Are you kidding? There hasn't been a gimbal since Giuliani was wiretapping John Gotti's schnauzer. Besides, look at us. We're just like we imagined. Tracy and Hepburn meet Court TV.
We are not. There's nothing cute about this. You're accusing Jackie and me of grand theft.
Look, we're friends. I mean, let's put the best face on it. Let's just say I'm accusing you of baby grand theft. Besides, what kind of a name is Jackie Safra? I mean, with a Q. That's not a producer. That's a stripper who works near Ben-Gurion Airport.
Woody, this is stupid. The only reason I'm having dinner with you is because my attorney and I agreed that this was the only way to keep you from having dinner with her.
Good evening. May I take your order? Maybe start with a nice pike?
Rabbi Kitzler, what would I want with a bicycle at this time of night?
He said pike, Woody. Pike.
Mm. The chef made with the truffles on it. But look, you two, before I take your order, can I sit down with you and knock your heads together?
Rabbi, I didn't make the reservation for three. I'd hate to lose this table. It's...
So, look, you two. Jean.
She's Janice in the film, and we pan to Janice as she sits fuming.
Woody, we're not making a movie.
Well, don't tell me. Tell the crew. They're out shooting exteriors.
Jean, you get something out of this arrangement. You get to write off fine cars and trips against the budgets of the films.
Well, there were a few times when we may have exceeded the bounds of fungibility.
And Woody, you get to make movies and cast younger and younger women as your love interests.
I'm just not good at writing parts for actresses over 25 anymore. I admit it.
Don't you two see that you have more to lose than to gain by continuing this silly lawsuit? For it is Rabbi Akiva observed in his commentaries on Reb Ben Eliezer the Wiser, a dispute which engulfs both participants cannot but ensnare them in moral quicksand, for the complainant and the complained against both have in common this.
I can't believe it, Gene. I cannot find one rabbi in all of Manhattan who goes against type.
God himself.
Maybe it's my fault for not thinking outside the phylactery.
Look, this is inappropriate. Tracy and Hepburn never submitted to binding arbitration by a religious cleric.
Wait, you didn't see the director's cut of Adam's rib, obviously. There was a pedophile priest who brought them together in the last scene. You know what? Maybe after dinner, when the rabbi's finished, you could come over to my place, bring your attorney. We watch some of my beta tapes of the 72 Knicks.
I am not bringing over my attorney. She's young enough to be your other stepdaughter.
But that's just it. I mean, I thought she could be a friend for Sun Yi.
Woody, you know what we were doing during recess today? Staying in the ladies' room, laughing at you.
That's the good kind of staying in the ladies' room and laughing at me, though, right?
Maybe we should just order.
Okay, but one suggestion? That's a treat, you know, because... Exterior night. Stoney walking down the block to his apartment building. Wider shot. Stoney's limousine trailing him down the street, just in case. Stoney's voiceover. Maybe I should have waited until the trial is over to be writing this. But I never forgot what Eli Zabar once told me. Stories are like brisket, better fresh.
Keep on loving me, honey. Keep on loving me true.
Baby, I'm gonna love you no matter what you do.
For so long I depended on nothing but you. Me, honey, don't you go nowhere.
Don't you know I'm satisfied with your tender care?
And I get my inspiration, darling, just knowing you're there.
So don't you take your love, don't take it away from me. 'Cause like a leaf out on a tree,
you become a part of me.
Don't you take your love, don't take it away from me. 'Cause if you leave, you might as well.
You girl now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Public Radio Weekend is now in the works. Program directors at public radio stations around the country want it to be fun, funny, and flexible, with elements of Saturday Night Live, CBS's Sunday Morning, and David Letterman thrown in. Local stations would cherry-pick the parts they want, but that takes experienced weekend hosts, which most stations don't have, because they lack the money. speaking of money, the Sea Crane Company is proud to support Le Show, offering long-range radios, antennas, and more for over 25 years. The Sea Crane Radio Light and Science Catalog is available online at ccradio.com or by calling 1-800-522-8863. And this is your inexperienced host announcing that that will conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, and around the world whenever you want it on your computer at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like having feral parrots all over the world if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.